It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
This is a point that you've already been hearing me hammer home this week, and you're going to continue to hear from me. We're hearing it from other places as well. I'm going to play you some audio of that in just a moment. K-State needs to hit the transfer market this offseason. It seems like we're resigned now to Bruce Weber being back next year. Even the most ardent Bruce haters, I get the feeling now, are pretty resigned to that fact. The way Gene Taylor spoke on the show yesterday, there was no indication that anything had changed on that front. So if he's coming back, if he's going to be your guy, even if this team beats Iowa State on Saturday and is a 4-win Big 12 team, and that's technically an improvement from last year, they are not fixing that shooting problem without hitting the transfer market. Not fixing the shooting problem significantly enough, anyway, to actually get back to the middle of the pack of the league, which I agree with Fran Fraschilla's assessment from yesterday, should really be the goal. You need to get back in like 4 through 6, that kind of range in the Big 12 to be legitimately putting yourself in contention for the tournament. And like that has to be where you're going next year. And a big part of why that needs to be where you're going next year is because how many 3-year rebuilds do you see around college basketball these days? Like 3- and 4-year rebuilds. Like programs that are actually of the caliber of K-State are not doing that because the transfer market is available to supplement rosters. I could find transfer numbers through the 2019 season, and the portal was at about 700 kids. About 700 kids transferring. I would imagine it's only gone up since then. It's going to go up more this year because of exactly what we saw with football. The pandemic and everybody anticipating, hey, I'm going to get a free one-time transfer without penalty. The transfer portal should be wide freaking open this year. And that is a way to make yourself older. Like, we've heard so much about the youth of this team and the inexperience of this team. That's a way to make yourself older very quickly. Being older, I think, can help solve one of K-State's two main problems, which seem to be universally agreed upon: turnovers and three-point shooting. Well, if you get older, I think that cuts down on the turnovers. The three-point shooting, you've just got to go find somebody that's more skilled that can shoot the ball that this team doesn't have right now and they don't possess. And that's the kind of commodity I just think you're literally only finding on the transfer market at this point. Maybe there's somebody that's a prep school kid. Maybe there's some kind of high school kid that they can go still land at this point, this stage, this late in the game. I don't have a lot of confidence in that. The transfer market is how you go do it. And everybody is doing it these days. Baylor is playing basketball right now. Scott Drew, and I mean like literally right now, like they tipped off at 4 o'clock. I don't just mean like Baylor is playing a basketball season. Baylor's playing basketball right now. Scott Drew has 4 transfers in his rotation. 4! And there's all this talk, like when Baylor beat K-State by 48 earlier this year, all the talk was like, man, well, they're mature, they're veteran at all these different spots, not just that, but talented. So much depth of talent all across the board, completely outclassed what K-State was. They handed K-State the worst loss in school history by 48 points. Well, they've utilized the transfer market to help do that. And you don't have to take just my word for it, and I don't need to come necessarily on here and play other radio hosts to like validate my opinions. I don't need the validation. I don't really care. But I did think this was really intriguing to hear from a more regional voice. It's Seren Petro at Sports Radio 810 in Kansas City. He was making the point about, hey, look at what Baylor's roster is. Look at what Gonzaga's roster is. How they've supplemented those rosters. And then how would you feel about that if you're a K-State fan?
If you want to be a non-traditional power that plays with the traditional powers at their level, you've got to get in the transfer market. That's why, for me, if you're a K-State fan, and if the plan is, well, this young group, I mean, you just wait. You wait until the spring of 23, and we're going to be on the bubble. Like, bite me if I'm a K-State fan. You know, we're going to sit around and wait for you know, these kids to develop. Why? Everybody else is going and getting talent that's ready to go. There's no reason to be sitting around and needing these 3 years of rebuild in college basketball. You can rebuild on the fly. If you've got a coach that will get in and a coaching staff that will get into the transfer portal and find the talent.
Now, I play that for a couple of reasons. One, because I think it's more strongly worded than a lot of what we've been saying and dancing around for a lot of the year, which I think is because, look, there's a lot at play there. I have to maintain some relationships on all sides of the aisle here. We are also closer to it, where it's like, if you're closer to it, sometimes that leads to a more nuanced opinion than just looking at it with more of a bird's eye view. But I think in this case, like, that is the correct take, and that is the correct, I think it helps to be removed enough from it to view it like that. To just look down and be like, look, like, you guys, somebody that's covering this program on a regional basis, like, think about that. Like, in Kansas City, like, you're watching and following K-State, and I think Soren does a better job of it than a lot of people in the Kansas City market. But they're, you know, when K-State is relevant, you will talk about them. When they're not, you're not going to as much. Well, if you're evaluating it from that standpoint, you're like, look, you guys, like, this has been a program that was relevant enough for a while. I mean, I was talking about K-State on a fairly regular basis there for a while. I haven't now in a couple of years, except for when they're getting beat by 48, and it's just an embarrassment. And now 2 years of this, and yet the refrain right now still is, well, look how young they are, and they are making some improvement here at the end of the year. Just wait until the youth grows up. That's also somebody who looks around the game. Like, he's been an AP voter. Like, I know he pays a lot of attention to college basketball. I mean, to be honest, like, far more than I do to what's going on the national scene in college hoops. And if you look around the national scene in college hoops, I mean, it does not take a magnifying glass and, you know, a goofy little hat like you're some private investigator to figure out that, like, everybody hits the transfer portal. Everybody hits the transfer portal hard. And that's how you can stay old. Like, there's not really an excuse to be obscenely young in basketball for an extended period of time anymore. So the time is now. Like, I can understand how this past year, like, again, the real problem was last year that blew up in their face and was so bad. You knew that you were going to have to take on some youth this year. And if it was a one going into it, not knowing about a pandemic, if you were saying, let's just start building from the ground up with some of these younger guys, not go for a total quick fix with the transfers. Like, okay, I still think in hindsight that's a mistake. You should have infused some more, but whatever. The thing is, now is the time to go do it. Like, now it's been proven this team is far too young. This team has problems that are not going to be fixable in the current roster. The time is now. You have to go do this now. And my fear is that is not going to happen because it's not something that this staff has been really accustomed to doing very often.
Well, first of all, nobody is out there saying, look, guys, just wait until maybe next year, maybe the year after when this group is older. All right, that's when they're really going to shine. Nobody is saying that. Nobody has, I don't think that has that kind of optimism. You're not going to find it.
None of the fans are saying that.
That's what I'm talking about. The fans just do not have the optimism.
But if you talk to people within the program, or you talk to, you know, I mean, like, Gene Taylor's public stance right now, that's basically what it is.
But I just want to realize, John, what you're asking is you're asking this coaching staff to really step out of their comfort zone. Okay, it's not like the staff hasn't been going after transfers in the last couple of years, but it's JUCO guys. As a matter of fact, going after Casey Eziegu from UTEP, that was splurging a little bit. Just going from somebody that is from an FBS type of conference, a Group of Five conference, but he still needed a ton of work. He wasn't ready to play yet. He's been struggling. At UTEP, he played 12 minutes a game. He played in 29 games, and K-State wanted him to come here. It's hard for K-State to go focus on somebody at a bigger school that has played and has experience, is ready to go once he steps on campus, when they're too worried about building the talent they already have because they're so far behind everybody else.
Well, but figure it out. This is a business where you're being paid seven figures. You have to figure it out. And this is blending into another angle on this whole thing that I have, but I feel like this is where, if we're talking about Bruce Weber and the aging process and somebody who, again, I will stand up as much as I can for the accomplishments that he has here at K-State and in his coaching career. But this is where it feels like the game is starting to pass him and the staff by somewhat. Not being willing to get out of that comfort zone and play the transfer game. Because we can sit here and say, well, yeah, I mean, they had Casey Eziegu. He really hasn't been that good. And yeah, they went and got Mato Sala, and that didn't work out at all. And, you know, so they've tried it some, and it just hasn't. Justin Edwards wasn't what you thought he was going to be. Go be better at evaluating the transfers that you're getting. Like, all you have to do is look around the league, man. Like, Baylor has four transfers playing. Oklahoma's got three. Texas Tech has three. And these are all, like, key contributors. And teams that aren't suffering the dip that K-State just did over the last 2 years. Like, you have to do it. You have to do it. I'm not sure that I would say, like, North Dakota State's MO in football was taking a bunch of transfers. But look at what North Dakota State, their former head coach, Chris Klieman, who's now at K-State, look at what he did this past year. They pulled in five transfers this offseason to fix, by the way, a locker room issue. Like, they felt like there was a locker room issue. And the answer was to go find transfers. Because that's how you do it today. Like, that's how, that is, the game is changing, has changed, is changing, and that's how you have to do it today. And to bring it all back home, if we're talking about the two problems that K-State has right now, universally agreed upon, three-point shooting and turnovers. Like, Mike McGurl is old. Mike McGurl is ancient in college athlete terms and maybe back for another year. The guy's averaging over three turnovers per game in Big 12 play. He turns it over a lot. And that's one of the two big problems that you have. That's another point that I'll make today. Like, if he is going to be back in the same role, I don't like that. I don't like that. I would rather see a transfer guard or a transfer wing take some of those minutes. Because Mike's not getting it done. He's not a good three-point shooter, and he turns it over a lot. Those are your two biggest problems. And three-point shooting in general. Like, let's go down the rot. Nigel Pack, we can all agree, looks to be a guy who's a shooter. Great shooter. Actually, Big 12 numbers haven't been that good, but overall this year he's like 37%. But the rest of the roster, Dejuan Gordon, that guy looked like a shooter. Selton Miguel, does he look like a shooter? Antonio Gordon, shooting a whopping 17% from three-point range this year, does he look like a shooter? No. I mean, like, Luke Kasubke, I think, is a build out of high school, is a decent shooter. He's at 24% this year and has had some really bad misses. I'm willing to cut him some slack, but, like, that's borderline at best. Like, they just don't have – these are not guys that have it right now. And the only two examples I can come up with over the Bruce Weber era of guys who have really improved their shots, Shane Southwell did it for the 1 year where he all of a sudden went from, you know, like, 30% to 40%, which was I think it was like 43. It was an insane jump 1 year, but then it kind of fell back the next. And then Wesley Iwundu. Wesley Iwundu is an example of somebody who did not have much of a shot and developed a decent shot by his final year at K-State. But that's basically it. Like, we don't have other examples of them really doing this with a bunch of different players. And you can't just tell me, well, Wesley Iwundu did it, so three of the four that I just rattled off on that list are going to do it. That's not the way to do it. You just need to get better shooting talent into this program. I mean, you have to get the skill actually here.
K-State has to recruit like they're going to lose Mike McGurl. Mike might be ready because he's played his entire collegiate career halfway across the United States from where he lives. He might be ready to bounce. He might be ready to try somewhere for 1 year, final year of eligibility, somewhere closer to home. I mean, losing Mike McGurl is a bigger loss than I think people will realize. All right, he pretty much single-handedly won that game against Oklahoma State. I mean, offensively, he's the guy that's going to hit those clutch shots right now. And be quite honest with you, I don't like a K-State. I don't like this K-State team without Mike McGurl. I really don't. It's a big step back. He's your only leader.
All right, let's talk about it next then. Let's talk about it next because I disagree. And I think Mike's a great guy. I think he's provided some very cool moments, particularly his freshman year against Creighton. And if, again, he were just asked to be a role player the entire time that he was here, this would be a different discussion. I think we would not be having to have an argument like this where I tear him down. But I don't think he's good enough, and I don't think you're getting to where you want to go if he's playing this many minutes again next year. We'll discuss it next. All right, look, I think K-State really needs to hit the transfer market this offseason. Would really like to see it happen. I don't think that means Mike McGurl, like, has to go. he is somebody that has already graduated. He is somebody that has already had a senior night. Well, I assume he's already graduated.
He's graduating this spring.
Okay. Thank you for being on top of that. I, however, don't want him back in the same role that he's been at this year, where he's playing 35 minutes per game, turning it over three times per game, shooting in Big 12 play 30.5% from three-point range. Like, none of that is very good. And the two problems that this team has are shooting the basketball and turning it over. And Mike, unfortunately, has been a big part of both of those things. If Mike McGurl were back to bench guy, the role that he played in 2017-18 and 2018-19, when they went to the Elite Eight and they won a Big 12 championship, I'd have no problem here at all. No problem here at all. Like, you know what I mean? I'm trying to think of an example of this that would not be really offensive, but like, I don't want the point. Everything I think of is trying to be offensive here. I was going to say, like, I don't want the guy who does a great job, like, taking the trash out every single day, like the trash man trying to do my taxes. Like, you know, it's just a different kind of role. Like, that's not, he may be great at the role that he does, but he's not built for what he's being asked to do. And that's a completely unfair analogy just for lack of me being able to come up with something better. But I think you get the point. Like, because he's not that far off, but he's also, he's not what K-State is needing him to be right now. And I think you'd be better off taking a chance on a transfer. And this is where it comes down to, Mitch. I know you said, like, these guys, they'd have to be getting out of their comfort zone to do this, to go hit the transfer market. They haven't done it a whole lot. Like, well, then that's where you have to evaluate better. You have to be a better evaluator in what it is that you're going to get. Like, there should be, when we already have 700-plus on the transfer market available every single year and likely to see more this year because everyone's been cooped up in a pandemic that's been frustrating and you're going to get the one-time free transfer, there should be somebody that's better than Mike McGurl out there. There should be multiple players, multiple guards that can provide you more than what McGurl does. And that's simply the point that I'm making. So if he wants to come back and take a lesser role, and you can throw somebody in there as many minutes as him, maybe more, depending on how it goes, like, that to me is the ideal solution. So, like, yes, Mitch, I would love for Mike McGurl to be back if it is splitting more minutes with somebody else who can shoot and doesn't turn it over as much.
This isn't going to be as much of a debate as you would like here, because I'm really on the same page with you. I agree with you. He needs to take on a lesser role, but it's really not his fault that he's had to take on pretty much everything this season, just because the lack of talent that's behind him or with him on the floor. That's not his fault. If you want to pick on him about the turnovers, well, that's not fair to just pick on him. Everybody's had their turnover issues this season. Mike just has more than everybody else. Now, Mike is at the top of that mountain, but he's also redeemed himself probably more times than a lot of the other guys have this season, with the exception of probably Nigel Pack. But stepping out of the comfort zone with the coaches, that's why I'm so afraid with Mike McGurl leaving, okay? Because then I have to assume that if they're going to go to the transfer route, they're going to go after another, you know, like a Casey Ziegu, like a David Sloan would be an example at the JUCO level, who's somebody who really shined at that level but just didn't quite adapt and completely evolve to this level of playing time or in the competition. I mean, John, if I ask you, you break down on the side of the road or you get a flat tire, I mean, I need you to step up and change that tire. And if you just do it yourself, it's going to be a great learning experience. You're going to be more well off probably if you just change the tire yourself, because it's a great learning experience for you, John.
Yeah, but I would tell you, I mean, I'm not sure that I'm completely following that, but I would tell you that, like, here, you don't have the jack in your trunk. Like, you don't have the proper equipment. Like, McGurl is not equipped, I don't think, in this role to get you where it is that you want to go next year.
Well, most cars,
and the staff, by the way, needs to be thinking like that, because I would imagine and think and assume that next year, like, the expectation is, like, you guys better be in the tournament or damn near it, or else, I mean, you're coaching for your job, so, like, take the chance. Like, you've got to improve your roster and get better. It can't be about, you know, blind faith or loyalty to McGurl, as nice as that might sound on the surface.
Well, John, most cars come with the jack and the extra spare tire. You just need to be a man, get out there and change that tire, or else you're going to probably be stuck on the road for quite some time and probably going to be late to where you really want to be because of this flat tire.
Well,
that's probably a better analogy.
Mitch, like, I there's no chance that I'm going to be able to change a tire, just like there was no chance that having to play McGurl 35 minutes per game was going to result in you making the NCAA tournament. Now, if you ask me to drive the car, that I can do. Change the tire, that I cannot. There's your analogy.
So this is an analogy debate instead of a Mike McGurl debate. Anyway, but I think we're pretty much on the same page here. But what I'm basically getting at, though, is I'm not expecting K-State to go get that big-time recruit or that big-time transfer.
But you have to try, is what I'm saying.
I get that.
You have to try.
But do you think it's actually going to happen? That's the whole story with Mike McGurl. Because if you don't actually go try and you lose Mike McGurl, screwed. You're probably screwed.
Well, what you're saying is if you go try and lose out on said transfer and then lose Mike, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, that too. That too.
Okay, because I don't think in any world there's a plan where they tell Mike to go and then they don't try. I mean, like, I don't know. My perception here, I'm operating off just some perceptions, but my perception would be that McGurl is not going to want to come back if it's going to be with a lesser role. I also would think that, like what Fran Fraschilla was saying on the broadcast on Saturday, like, if he wants to do what is, like, in his best interest, it would be to come back if he can play the same role that he's playing right now, just come back to college for another year and do that. That's the assumption that I'm operating off of. But you have to go try for a transfer, because to me they may evaluate this differently and say, like, hey, we can get these guys in the gym, we'll get them better at shooting, we're going to turn everybody into Wesley Owundu and Shane Southwell from 2014. They're all going to improve their shooting that much. I'm just not buying that's going to happen. And I would think if they're realistically looking at it, they would say, like, we need to take a swing for the fences here. We do. Like, you're down one, two outs, you're at the plate. I mean, you can try and bunt your way on, I guess, but, like, how about just taking a big rip and trying to actually hit something in the gap or over the fence? Like, you have to go take your shot. And that, to me, is what this comes down to.
Yeah, you take your shot at a guy, but can you just try to go out and recruit just one guy? I mean, they're going to have to probably try to go out and get at least a couple of guys' attention that are experienced and have played a lot of minutes and have scored some points at a bigger level than what K-State has been recruiting with the transfers at the JUCO level. So, and that means taking less attention or taking attention away from the lesser talent that they have been going after that they're hoping they can develop. Is that a gamble they want to take? I don't know. I guess we'll see. I just don't feel like that is a gamble they're willing to take right now.
It's a gamble I would like to see them take, and it's a gamble that I think they need to take. I'll just put it that way. And I don't know what's going to happen with the rest of the roster. I mean, there are probably some spots where you need to be having some difficult conversations with guys, but we've seen that happen in the past. I would imagine that we saw that happen last year based on how many guys left, and a lot of that was some dead weight at the end of the roster. If you want to save your job, like, that's the kind of conversation that needs to happen. And that's why I'd love to be a fly on the wall for Gene Taylor and Bruce Weber's meeting, whenever it is that that's going to occur at the end of the season, to see what the conversation is there about, like, hey, exactly what Gene told us yesterday. Like, all right, I'll sit down and say, like, hey, what do we need to do to get better? Like, what are we doing here to actually try to improve this situation? Because I'm not listening to an argument that, like, oh, we'll get the guys back in the gym and the shooting is going to improve from They are at 28% from three-point range on the season. They are 5% lower than ninth place in the Big 12. That is unbelievable. That is terrible. Just terrible. And I'm not listening to, hey, we'll get everybody on the little shot counter in the practice facility over the summer, and that's going to fix the problem. Don't think that's going to do it. Kansas football continues to take a beating. We'll talk about that next. Couple of things here, Mitch, to put a bow on that McGurl discussion. So his three-point percentage has gone from 24 to 27, jumped up last year to 40, which is great, and then back down this year to 33%, which is the highest usage rate that he's had by far at 35 minutes per game. And that, to me, feels like a pretty, based on what we've seen throughout his career, like a pretty accurate assessment of where he's at. And that's where I have my doubts that things are going to improve. I don't think that we're seeing 40% from him next year. If you could guarantee me that, that would be one thing. I don't think that that is likely to happen. Honestly, like it's the Shane Southwell trajectory so far, where it's, you know, there's this one-year spike and then back down. This comes from our buddy Chris Nelson, who does some great work for K-State Online. But the comparison that I keep making about Mike McGurl, like, he's being asked to do too much, and we would think of him much differently if he were in a different role. And I don't, you know, kids just, like, guys get overexposed when they have to do too much. He brings up Martavius Irving. Like, we all remember Martavius Irving pretty fondly. It's because Martavius Irving got to be, like, the fifth or sixth most important player on all those great teams, like on the Elite Eight teams, playing with Jacob Pullen and Curtis Kelly and Denny Clemente. What the hell am I doing calling him Dennis? Denny Clemente. All right? Like, on those teams, if he can be fourth or fifth wheel or fifth or sixth wheel, he's great and everybody loves him. And he can come back and people will be like, hey, awesome, Martavius Irving, that's great. Maybe some will do that with Mike McGurl, but it's different when you get put in this position and you get overexposed. That's what, when McGurl was playing the Martavius Irving role on those first couple of teams he was on, it's a much different deal. Much different deal. I'm just trying to operate in reality here. I don't want to have to slam the guy, and I'm not trying to slam the guy. I'm just pointing out what I think to be some realities.
But what was Martavius Irving known for more? Playing basketball or dancing in the tunnel?
Well, you're right. That increased some of his appeal as well. But if he's dancing in the tunnel and the team loses 13 straight games, nobody's talking about him dancing in the tunnel. There probably wouldn't be dancing in the tunnel. That's why we're having this discussion about McGurl, and we never had a discussion like this about Martavius Irving, and it's why he's been overexposed and not going to be remembered likely as fondly because of that. If he would have just stayed in the same role as he did the first couple of years, it would be a different deal. All right, so Kansas football is losing now their director of player personnel, David Shumate. He is leaving for UCF. UCF. Now, I know a snarky reaction to that could be, John, are we really going to make fun of somebody for losing a coach to UCF, losing somebody from their football staff to UCF? I realize that Chris Dawson just went to UCF. Let's go back, though, through the Kansas offseason. They have already lost Brent Dierman to Middle Tennessee. Now we're talking about losing your player personnel guy to UCF. They lost their outside linebackers coach to SMU, who took a position coach job. It was like defensive ends or defensive line. Not an upgrade in terms of responsibility. Lateral moves. We're seeing lateral moves to non-Power 5 conferences from multiple members of the Kansas football staff. Like, if that doesn't tell you all you need to know about not just the current state of Kansas football, like, just as a program, like, their place in the college football world is, to be honest, quite lower than, like, UCF right now, or even an SMU. Like, those places are more prominent. You have a better chance of winning. I think you have a better chance of career advancement just by virtue of them being those schools and Kansas being Kansas. But I think it's also indicative of, like, what the situation is right now with Les Miles. The combination of what it must be like working for him. I mean, we hear the press conferences. We hear the press conferences. We hear every hellaciously awkward moment that occurs there. And there's no way that behind the scenes there aren't some of those moments too. And like, what are you thinking if you're somebody that's on staff there being like, God, and like, where is this going? We can't win a damn game. Then you throw on top of it what's happened now with the allegations of sexual harassment at LSU and the reporting that is coming out on all of that. I would imagine that just hastens a lot of this. There's no way to look at that situation right now other than it's a disaster. It's a disaster. When you have multiple coaches in an offseason jumping to jobs where not, Not a single one of them is going to a Power 5 school. Not a single one of them. So you're not performing well enough to be catapulting anybody, and everybody else is just jumping off ship anyway to get to whatever opportunity it is that they can to bolt away from this place. And now you're dealing with extra stuff on top of it that might get worse at the end of the month when that judge in Louisiana is supposed to decide whether or not to allow some of the actual specific accusations to become public, which is what the papers, the USA Today, the Times-Picayune, those papers down there in Louisiana are fighting for. So I saw that and just had to shake my head. That's an SMH moment right there. Shake my head at what I'm seeing with another person leaving that program for a job that is in a non-Power 5 conference.
Well, and this job, though, this job is a player personnel type of job, a director of player personnel. Now, this isn't like a coordinator position. This has on hands like recruiting, that type of stuff, but also like management with the staff. All right, this is a low-paying job when it comes to football staffs, all right? So, I mean, to say this is in complete connection to what's going on with Les Miles, it could. All right, it could. And yeah, that is another blow to the staff. It's not the biggest deal to me, but I do completely agree that any kind of press right now for Les Miles, with a coach leaving, personnel leaving, it digs a bigger hole for Les Miles, and every little piece of that makes it more awkward for him to when he finally has to get in front of a mic and explain, all right, this has happened, these people are leaving, what in the hell is going on right now with Kansas football?
Yeah, I would say it's not so much about just this one specific instance. It's just another.
It's adding up.
So yeah, it's another cut. If we're talking about death by a thousand cuts, it's the slow drip. It's another drip that's coming out, and eventually you have enough of those drips, starts to pile up, and you've got a heck of a puddle, and you find yourself in a tough spot. And it also, Mitch, the timing I think is important because it's one that we're seeing now after this stuff has come out. Now maybe. Maybe some of those inside the Kansas program that had already left, like had an idea something like this maybe coming out, kind of doubt it the way Kansas reacted with their public statement saying that they really had no idea. I would think that's more doubtful, but who knows? Could be accurate. Either way, I think it is significant and something to keep monitoring, like what happens there. Because you're already, if you're going to Kansas and joining up with that staff, I mean, based on where their program's at, you do have to worry about what that's going to do to your career. You simply do, because they're just too far behind and they're losing so many games and your coach is not some young up-and-comer that like everybody's buying in on and feeling great about. Like, no, you're trying to put your trust in a ring that's, God, what was that, like 2007? A ring that's 14, 15 years old at this point? Like, that's what you're putting your trust in. So I think more and more people will look at this like career suicide if you're trying to go to Kansas right now.
Well, you want Bruce Weber and his staff to go out and get a big-time recruit and get a big-time transfer that's ready to come in and play right away. Les Miles ain't doing that. He needs to go find somebody that needs a job, just simply needs a job in football, somebody that is looking for the experience, somebody that doesn't have hardly experience and maybe could grow there because right now they have nothing to lose.
Man, I thought you were about to say, like, he's trying to recruit off of his ring. I was like, man, his ring's 2 years old, okay? 2 years old, not 14. It's different. Nigel Pack finds a way to do the impossible next. It's a good song for this, Mitch. Very cool song, Indie Club by 50 Cent. It was very, very cool in 2003 when this came out. Mitch is bailing on me when I need him here for this discussion. Nigel Pack made, I think, the impossible look cool. And that is an eye infection. Like, I don't know how anyone could ever think it would be possible to make an eye infection look cool, but that shot of him on the sideline, like wearing sunglasses, just chilling out in his warm-ups, his basketball-ish gear. He looked like a cool freaking dude. And I don't think eye infections. What would be tougher to make look cool than an eye infection? Like, I don't know. Like, you going to tell me someone can make a colonoscopy look cool? Is that the next step, the next iteration to this? How can you make like jorts look cool? Like, can Nigel Pack make jorts look cool? If he can pull off eye infection, making that look cool, would jorts work? what else is on that list of things that would be as difficult or more difficult to make look cool?
Turf toe.
Well, Patrick Mahomes has already made turf toe look very, very cool.
You're going to wear a clown shoe? Say, hey, man, don't want my toe rubbing anything.
See, I think that's already that's scratched off the list. Mahomes has already done that.
Did he make it look cool? I mean, Super Bowl 55. He's running all over the place.
And he beat the Bills with it. He's fine. Still made it look pretty cool. He almost had the greatest completion in NFL history in said Super Bowl with turf toe. Okay? So I don't want to hear it about that. I don't want to hear it. Yeah, I don't. That is a testament to Nigel and his potential. We've been talking a lot here on the show about concerns for the future. Need to go hit that transfer market before I'm going to start feeling very good at all about this team getting back to the middle of the pack in the Big 12. But the star potential for Nigel Pack does appear to be off the charts. Like, that's the other part of that discussion and seeing that shot there. We're talking about somebody who could be a star. If he has the cachet to pull that off, if he has that in him, who knows what the marketing opportunities are for him here. Because it's not just about his ability, and clearly he's proven that he has the ability to be a star based on the way he actually plays the game of basketball. But the other stuff that comes along with it, the stuff that I really like, that kind of thing, the indicators are high. Like if we're using the baseball scale, I'm seeing like a 70 or 75 cool potential for Nigel Pack if he's able to do that.
I mean, I like the Ray-Bans, but I'd kind of like to see an eye patch.
No,
tough look.
See, this is, Mitch, this is, God. That's why Nigel was able to do it and maintain the possibility of him being a total superstar. Because he didn't go for the eye patch, said, give me some damn shades.
He was indoors.
A sign that the game is passing Bruce and company by. We'll talk about it next.